The following podcast is presented by the Society of American Magicians.
And the audience is loving it, and I'm thinking like, okay, this is going well. But probably after the 14th or 15th orange that we cut open, they're probably going to lose interest.
I don't remember precisely where the music stopped. I think I went into sort of shock.
Hi, I'm Bruce Calver, SAM president from 2008 to 2009. Welcome to the Backstage SAM podcast. On July 1st through 4th, 2015, the SAM will present its 87th annual convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It will be the fifth time the SAM has congregated in Philadelphia. SAM conventions are filled with lots of moments that are exciting, enlightening, entertaining, and sometimes frightening. Mistakes do occur, and on today's show, we tell you about two that happened on stage. What is unusual about these mistakes is that we wonder if we can really call them mistakes. Sure, something went wrong, but ultimately, the glitch created a happy ending for both of our performers. First up is Tim Ellis from Australia, who back at the SAM convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was drawn into an unexpected moment in his act. Here's Tim to tell you about it.
So this happened 15 years ago in the year 2000 at the Milwaukee SAM convention. That was the one that was everyone remembers really clearly, because there was also a Harley Davidson convention and the streets were filled with these incredibly loud motorbikes just riding around all day and all night. So we went to a really big theater. I don't know what it was called, but obviously in Milwaukee was for the big gala show. And I decided that I'd finish my set on stage with my card stab routine. It's a really weird routine though. What happens is I go to try and find a selected signed card, but after gaffer taping my eyes closed and I'm stabbing to the table to find the card, but inadvertently in my blindfolded state, I've knocked all of the cards off the table, so there's no card on the end of the knife. And I walk forward to the edge of the stage and I say, "Earlier tonight, I gave a member of the audience a piece of fruit. I would like that person to stand up and throw the fruit to the tip of this knife." What the audience don't realize is that I've given out 200 oranges to different members of the audience, and each member of the audience thinks they're the only one. So as I say this, 200 people all stand up and throw the fruit at me, and then suddenly realize there's another 199 people throwing fruit, and I just get pummeled with fruit from every direction. And the gag is then I take the tape off and I look around and I say, "Oh, the weird thing is I didn't give out any oranges. There should be a lemon here." So then I look for the lemon, and as the trick is supposed to happen, we cut it open and there's the card inside. However, on this occasion, for some reason, maybe it was the season, I'm not sure, the lemons in Milwaukee just happened to look about the same shape and the same size as the oranges. And the stage lighting made the difference between lemon color, nice shiny yellow, looked almost the same as the orange color. So as I turned around and I looked, I couldn't see any lemons. In fact, all of the oranges on stage looked like lemons under the lighting. And I suddenly went, okay. And if you look on the video, you can see this moment of panic as I suddenly realize I have no idea which one is the lemon. And so we're going through them, and suddenly I go, "All right, there it is. That is the lemon. That is the lemon." And the guy says, "Don't want to touch it." The volunteer picks it up. He takes it, puts it on the table, and starts to cut it. And I go, "No, that was an orange. Okay." And the audience is loving it, and I'm thinking like, okay, this is going well. But probably after the 14th or 15th orange that we cut open, they're probably going to lose interest. So we've got to find this lemon. And then suddenly, at the last minute, I just suddenly see this lemon. And it's almost like that moment in the Blues Brothers where Jake is suddenly hit with that glowing light from above. And I just suddenly saw this lemon. I'm like, "Yes, that's it." And the guy took it, cut it open. And inside, of course, was his signed card. And It was terrifying and yet hilarious at the time, and it's just one of those moments that could only happen to a magician, and of course only at an SAM convention.
So what went through your mind when you got off stage?
As soon as I got off stage, it was just funny. It was just one of those, I don't know, I'm not a precious performer if something goes wrong and it actually improves the show. And that was one of those moments where, because it's an audience of magicians, I just love the fact that when something goes wrong and the audience knows it and they're watching the traditional magician in trouble and going, what's going to happen? It's such a heightened awareness and a heightened excitement in the whole room. So for me, because we were able to solve it and find the lemon and cut it open, that was great. And it was just a lot of fun. Of course, if we hadn't found the lemon, it would have been a very different moment.
I asked him if he really thought the audience knew there was a problem.
Oh, they knew there was a problem. They absolutely knew there was a problem and they loved it.
This time he improvised his way out of this predicament. But of course, Tim is the creator of Magic Sports. It's sort of like an improvisational game for magicians.
I mean, this is why we do Magic Sports all the time now, because the audience, when they know they're seeing something that is out of the ordinary, that's not normal, it's so good. You see so many times when people do, you know, oh dear, I've accidentally burned up your money. What are we going to do? The audience knows it's part of the act, and it just doesn't sell, because magicians are generally not very good actors. And the audience could tell immediately, as soon as I turn around and I look around, I go, oh, okay, where's the lemon? Immediately people are starting to go, all right, obviously this wasn't thought out as well as you. And then when we cut the orange open and, oh, no, that's an orange. It's this wonderful laugh of recognition and magician in trouble panic from the audience. And so all the magicians in the audience could relate to what was happening. And we're thinking probably I'm so glad it didn't happen to me.
So now that this has happened to you and you know how to recover, has this problem ever happened again?
No, and I'm disappointed actually. I only ever do that trick maybe once every 2 or 3 years. And there's a reason for that. And that is because I'm standing there blindfolded holding a knife while 200 people throw fruit at me. And it has happened when I did it in Australia, in Melbourne here, for a football event, where the footballers decided it'd be funny to aim at my face. And so I almost got a broken nose from the fruit that was hitting me. So I only tend to do it at magicians' events because I know that they're a little bit more kind and also really bad throwers.
This is not a normal routine for the carded lemon. I'm sure other things have happened while you've performed this. Got another story for us?
So I did the same trick at FISM, and I think this was like a year before SAM, I'm not sure. And I did the trick in the gala show, and this is before I was really known or anything like that. They put me on the show. Ali Bongo was hosting, David Williamson, Pitt Hartling, Paul Gertner, a whole bunch of really great close-up magicians. And I did the rap and the cups and balls and all that sort of stuff and finished with the oranges. And the first time it happened, it was fantastic. The oranges hit everywhere. It was great. So then we had a second show the next day. And unbeknownst to me, after I had out all the oranges, a guy from India who'd spent all his last money on fruit. He loved the trick so much, he'd gone to the fruit market and bought a pallet of fruit. So after I hand out all the oranges and went backstage, he then circulated through the audience, giving anyone who didn't have an orange another piece of fruit. So when I did the whole thing, I said, throw the fruit, and I blindfolded, I heard all the oranges, and then the fruit just kept coming. It kept coming and coming and coming. And I took the blindfold off, or the gaffer tape off, and looked around, the whole set was destroyed. There was so much fruit everywhere. There was half a watermelon sitting at my feet. It would split open. Somebody had thrown a watermelon at me. And there was fruit everywhere. And I thought, this is the best thing. And suddenly I had this moment, I hope he hasn't got any lemons. I'm suddenly thinking, oh no, there's going to be hundreds of lemons. I wonder which one. But thankfully, he'd done the right thing. He'd got every sort of fruit known to man except lemons. Oh, and except coconuts, which was wise. And so it was just an ultra, ultra hilarious moment because this guy had enjoyed the routine so much, he'd added to it and made it better without me even knowing or being aware of it. It was very, very funny.
So as a performer, you're not thrown by these little detours that happen.
You know what I'm like. I love not knowing what's going to happen on the stage. That's the best time. I mean, I've seen so many performers, and I'm not going to name names because I'm sure you've got enough names of them in your head, people who get up on stage and you know that, like, if a fire would break out in the theatre, they'd still be standing on stage. They're so oblivious to everything. They're just reciting their patter and going through the motions. And I think that's the worst thing in magic. It's worth exposing the secrets because it's become a job. It's become a task. But when you're alive and in the moment, and you know the audience should be watching the magic, thinking, I'm seeing something completely unique that no one's ever seen before.
So when was the last time you did this routine?
I did it, I think the last time I did it was actually in Hong Kong at the Asian Magic Association Convention in Hong Kong, where Albert Tam had booked me. And I gave out so many oranges. The theater was like 2,000 people. And it's a very, very funny routine because for a start, when I say to the guy, could you sign the card, please? He actually signs the back of the card. And I'm like, you know, great. He's a magician. I ask him to sign a card. He signs the back. And I throw it away and he's going to do it again. It's just a very funny presentation. But at the end, there was so much fruit thrown. We did it before interval, so I actually had to follow Charlie Fry, who got a standing ovation, and closed the first act. But so much fruit landed on the stage that... we had to like mop for ages to clean the whole stage up afterwards. And then Albert Tam got this request from the theatre afterwards saying, he damaged our table when he stabbed it. I was like, oh, when I stab, I actually pretend to stab the table. So it was a very convincing performance, I think.
This has to be a very expensive routine, buying all that fruit.
Not really. Depends on the season you do it in.
Well, how many oranges do you buy at a time?
About 200, but yeah, I mean, I'm happy, you know, I'm happy to spend money if it's going to create a good effect.
So I can't leave without asking, what's your favorite fruit?
Surprisingly, I have two rainbow lorikeets who are a small Australian parrot, and every time... because they love fruit. They have apples and pears and grapes and bananas and they eat all different fruits. Anytime I have fruit, I feel guilty that I'm not giving it to them. So I tend to not have fruit at all. But I do enjoy grapes. But I just feel guilty when I'm eating them because I'm like, oh, the birds love grapes. They get so much pleasure out of one single grape and I'm sitting there eating bunches.
So do you do this trick once every 2 years because you've run out of fruit and you have to feed your birds?
Backstage SAM is brought to you by the Society of American Magicians National Convention. This year's festivities take place in Philadelphia from July 1st to July 4th and include lectures, performances, dealers from around the world, and the camaraderie of magic enthusiasts. Exciting shows like The Heart and Soul of Magic, The Magic of Spain, and Miguel Puga's one-man show will be presented over the 4th of July week. Register early for best seats and pricing. For more information, visit the website at www.magicsam.com. Then click on the convention link.
Tarkova is a name you might not be familiar with. A New Yorker who currently does mentalism, back when the SAM held their convention in 1995 in Boston, Massachusetts, he was a manipulator, and a very good one, too. who decided to enter the SAM stage contest. Unfortunately, gremlins were acting up during this entire competition, and Turkova was not immune. I recently Skyped with Turkova, who now lives in New Jersey, on a very noisy street, to reminisce about this moment in time where a mistake turned out to be an advantage.
The convention was in 1995, and it was the first competition I ever entered. I drove up from New York City with a couple of friends and were all set to do my coin act and compete for the first time. I have been practicing the act, I would say maybe 8 to 10 months. It's hard to say. I did it at the SAM Parent Assembly the year before that, and I think it was a little less than a year that I competed in Boston.
And how was the act received at the Parent Assembly show?
Well, I got a standing ovation at the SAM Parent Assembly, which is not an easy trick to pull off. And I realized that that was a good indication that I might have a chance to do well in the competition. And I think Eric DeCamps, who was at the show, at the meeting, agreed. And so I decided to compete then.
So who helped you put this manipulation act together?
The coin act itself, I pretty much did on my own. I didn't have any other coaching aside from what I would ask friends and other magicians about competitions and what to expect, but I pretty much did it on my own.
Your music was very important to your act. Tell us a little bit about how you picked it.
That's an interesting story, because previous to this, I had been doing a quote-unquote Chinese act, you know, an Asian act with Asian music. And it was Jackie Flosser who encouraged me to get a gimmick, kid, get a gimmick, you know, do a Chinese act. I said, I resisted it a long time. I finally did it, and it sort of worked, but it really wasn't me. Then one time I was down in Cape May doing a Victorian magic show, and they needed a change of costume, so I did an act in a tux. And we had a ragtime piano player live right on stage. And so we didn't have any canned music, so she played ragtime to formerly my Chinese act. And I really enjoyed being on stage to the ragtime. So I really felt good and happy, and that's when I started using that kind of music.
So when he put together his manipulation act, he remembered the fun he had listening to that ragtime music and put it in his act. The competition took place in a huge ballroom with very high ceilings. Everyone was spread out all over the place.
It's very difficult to perform an act with such high ceilings. It almost creates a barrier between you and the audience. All of the energy just goes up into the air instead of out to the audience. So it is a challenge performing with high ceilings like that. The act took quite a while to set up, a good 45 minutes. I have to assemble the coin ladder. I had a custom coin ladder made by a toy designer, and it folded flat, which I thought was a great innovation, but it also took time to set the thing up. So between loading all of the coins, I must have used between 250 and 300 coins or more at that point. You know, it took about 45 minutes to set up the act.
So the competition starts, and from the very beginning, from the first act and every single act afterwards, there was a problem. We don't know if it was a speaker cord was loose or the cassette deck was failing, but every act had a problem with their music. And the acts backstage, if they weren't in the room, didn't realize that this was happening. So each act would have to go off stage and come back on stage again and start again and hope that they got through.
And some of them would just stand there and look disgusted because their music had stopped. And some just were oblivious to it, totally oblivious to it. Well, Turkova came on towards the end of the competition. And I'm not even sure that he knew that all this music and sound problems were going on.
I wasn't aware of all the trouble with the music. If I had been, I probably would have been more upset, you know, and impatient. But I think the act started off to a great start, and I got through the act is in three phases, one to each set of the music. It's choreographed each song. So the first part went fine, and then I got to the second part, was the Entertainer, which was a popular song then. And that's right in the middle of that is when the music cut out. And I didn't know whether the tape broke or the machine stopped. And again, I wasn't aware of other troubles. I don't remember precisely where the music stopped. I think I went into sort of shock. And I'm sure my hands were loaded up with coins in some fashion or another. But I'm not quite sure exactly the point it stopped. But I knew it was pretty soon after I got into the Entertainer, the middle part of the trick, which is actually, I do the coin star, where coins would appear at my five fingertips, and then one at a time, they would jump over to the ladder. And at some point during that phase, the music cut out.
I remember you just kind of stopped and smiled. And you just kept smiling and smiling to the audience. And you would turn your head and smile to somebody else, and then turn your head and smile to somebody else. And we all waited for the music.
Yeah, I was glad because I have a lot of improv training. And my mentor and teacher was Bobby Baxter, the old vaudevillian. And we actually went to acting class together at times. And he told me before I left, I called him up, and he told me, just keep going. If the chandelier falls, keep going. And that's what I did. I stopped and I smiled, but I didn't drop my character.
And then something unexpected and amazing happened.
Yes, it was a couple of my buddies in the back row. And I think they started it as like a little goof because it stopped during the Entertainer. And everyone knew the song. So I think sort of was to help me, but more as a goof, I think they started to hum it. That's when I flash back to what my mentor said. He said, if the chandelier falls, keep going. So everyone started singing, humming. So I decided to just to use my hands, which were free of coins at the time, and conduct the audience and get more of the audience involved while we waited for the music to come back on. Because I knew I had a time limit, a very strict limit of 10 minutes. And I didn't know whether my cassette tape broke or the power cord got kicked out and the tape was still running. So I didn't know if I'd be totally in or out of sync once the music came on.
When the audience started singing, you conducted just a little bit and then everybody started singing. And you tilted your head to kind of acknowledge and say thank you very much. And you finished your act to the audience doing your music.
Yes, I was really pleased when because I thought they were going to stop singing after a couple of seconds, but they kept on, and I was grateful for that. So I actually continued on with my act to their humming, and then I think it seemed like an eternity, but it was probably a good minute later that the music did come back on. But at that point, the tape had kept running. It was just someone kicked the speaker cord out, I think, or something. So I actually had lost some time, and I wasn't able to perform some of the manipulations I really wanted to show the judges. So I quickly had to stop and think what to cut out so I could get back on track and finish on the beat with the last part of the music, which I managed to do, which shocked me.
And when the act was over, the audience gave him a standing ovation.
which I couldn't see. I had no idea. I had a sustained ovation with the lights in my eyes. I had no idea.
You finished and you got the standing ovation. As I sat down, I turned to my children and said, "He won." That's exactly what I said. I said, "He won because you won over the audience. You grabbed their attention. You didn't go out of character. And you did it. You got through it." Now, when it was over and you got off stage, what went through your mind? What happened?
I was very relieved when I got off stage, and I was happy that I was able to finish my act right on the beat. You know, it was made it very strong. I know I got a big hand. I didn't realize everyone had stood up, which was nice. But I'm exhausted. I'm dripping in sweat.
So the stage manager, Mike Miller, goes backstage and says to him that they apologize for the music problem, that once everyone else has performed, if he wants to go back again and do it again, he can. Well, he chose to do it again because he wanted to show off some of his manipulations that he didn't get a chance to do. What happens the second time he does it? He gets a second standing ovation. Now understand, it takes 45 minutes to set up this act, which he's done twice now in one morning. Well, the judging goes on in the afternoon. They assemble everyone, and then the announcement is made.
That night, they told me that I had won first place. And I was shocked and so happy. But then they said, "And as part of your first prize, you get to open tonight's gala show," which turns out was on the other side of town in another theater at 8 o'clock. And now it was 6:45. So I had to rush right out of the room and pack up my whole act and wheel it across town and set it all up again to do it a third time in one day.
I always love this story because it shows how a performer can get an audience on their side. Nice job, Turkova. I'll never forget that moment where we all sang so you could finish your act.
It was a great experience to go through all that.
Well, that's our show for today. Please spread the word. Have your friends, magic enthusiasts, listen to our podcast. Hope to see you in Philadelphia at our convention, July 1st through 4th. We have a trivia contest every week. Every time you enter and give a correct answer, we put your name in a hat and you're eligible for a weekly drawing. What do you win? Something from the SAM shop. Could be a hat, could be a deck of cards. You never know. It's a surprise, just like magic. We pulled a name out of a hat this week. That winner is Wayne Taylor. We'll be contacting you, and thanks for listening. Here's this week's trivia question. In 1902, in the back of a magic shop, the SAM was formed. What was the name of that magic shop? And by the way, spelling counts. Thanks for listening. See you soon.
Backstage SAM is edited by G.B. Mack and recorded in the Top Hat Production Studio for the Society of American Magicians. I'm your announcer, Arlene Calver. Comments and ideas for future shows can be sent to bruce@magicsam.com. This podcast is copyright 2015 by the Society of American Magicians.
Magic, unity.